morning. How are you? I'm Ken Burton. I'm the executive director of the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol, and I'm excited to be here. I appreciate Lori, and it's my first Beltwide, and so it's been educational for me. It's an exciting program. I've a year ago I was hired, and it's been a lot of development and a lot of promotions with it, and it's been quite a challenge, but exciting. You saw this earlier by Gary about the journey to sustainability for our industry, going from the 70s until where we are today. And of course, you heard about the our industry goals. One thing that I'd like to point out that until here recently, the cotton industry was one of the first commodities who had placed goals like this on ourselves. In fact, Rod Snyder, the president of Field and Market, commends us. He commended the Cotton USA Sustainability Task Force for doing that. He said that it was aggressive to do that, and it was important to point that out. And, of course, by achieving those goals, the environmental footprint for the industry shrinks, and that shows how I think Gary pointed this out earlier about how we went from the early 80s, that outer blue area of that pentagram, down to our goal is that center section. But my speech really is to talk about the program and to get into it. And I've gotten a lot of good information. And as far as what is the Trust Protocol, well, first, it's a single-member LLC. It's under the umbrella of the National Cotton Council. It's governed by a board comprised of growers and ginners, cooperatives, merchants, as well as civil societies and brands and retailers and spinners. To name a few, we have the World Wildlife Fund, Environmental Defense Fund, Tesco, Levi Strauss & Co., and also Louis Dreyfus Company. And so it's we had our first board meeting back in the beginning of December, and it was, you know, for 10 months here I was preparing, getting ready for this first board meeting and had all this information, and I thought here I was going to open up a fire hydrant and ask all of them to take a sip. But by the end of the two-day board meeting, they spun the fire hydrant back on me and provided me with all kinds of action items. So it was really exciting, and it was a good day. And you saw this earlier with Gary, too. It's a voluntary farm-level program designed to engage growers in the continuous improvement, that message that we're trying to drive home, as well as reaching the 2025 goals. It's also, as producers are enrolled and are part of it and take their self-assessment and also are part of the Fieldprint platform, we plan to have aggregate data that can be shared through the supply chain and help those brands and retailers as they make their impact claims. The requirement for the producer to be a protocol member, self-assessment against standards, the use of a data tool for environmental metrics, and then a verification by an independent party. I've taken some screenshots from the self-assessment, and I'm going to share that with you in a few minutes, but the as far as the questionnaire, it's nine categories, and it might be hard to read the categories. I'll read them out to you quickly. Soil health, nutrient management, water management, crop protection, harvest preparation, wildlife habitat, fiber quality and traceability, farm management, and worker relations. This self-assessment questionnaire is taking a overall look of the entire farming operation. And there's over 100 questions, and it takes a producer anywhere from 30 minutes to 45 minutes to complete this self-assessment. Now, each category, there's a group of questions. Some of them are required practices, and others are recommended practices. The recommended practices, their choices for answers are, I do this now in my operation. I'm implementing it on one or more of my fields. Or I'll consider it next 3 years, or it might not be appropriate for his farming operation. So this is a screenshot of questions for water management. And to give you, I'll zoom in on one of them. on installation of new wells or existing wells, comply with local and state requirements, including licensing if appropriate. Well, this producer, he answered, I'm in compliance. That's the only way he could answer it, because that's actually a required practice. The other one would be conserve and utilize natural rainfall and or tailwater through use of cover crops, terraces, furrow diking, holding ponds, reservoirs, or conservation tillage. The producer answered on this one, it wasn't appropriate for his farming operation. And these producers on this screen, you might not be able to see it, but along the way, they can, as they're looking at the questions, there's a gray eye to the left where it has information, where if as they're reading the question, they can highlight it, and it can direct them to specific websites to give them additional information on the questions. As well as to the right of the questions, there's a gray box that a producer, if he's he answers it, but he feels like he has to make some type of explanation, it allows him to provide where he can enter some text, where then it gives us a little bit more information as far as executive director, and which is nice to have that as well. Sample questions for soil health. Utilize conservation tillage practices such as minimum strip, mulch, or no-till. And let's see, that was number three. So he answered, I'm implementing this on one or more of my fields. Use permanent and or annual windbreaks to reduce wind erosion. He answered that with not appropriate for his farming operation. Sample questions for crop protection. Use licensed qualified consultants or certified crop consultants to monitor crop and pest status and make recommendations for management. Use plant-based measurements to help determine economic thresholds. Use science-based action thresholds to initiate insecticide treatments. And monitor for pest resistance and follow resistance management guidelines. For those questions, he's doing that now on most of his fields. And finally, the last screenshot, which I'm not going to bore you with screenshot after screenshot, but this is for wildlife habitat. And here's one, conduct habitat potential evaluation using NRCS or field and market tools. And conducted or number four, engaged a private land wildlife biologist for a farm visit to evaluate short-term and long-term future possibilities. The way he answered that was, let's see, number three was, I will consider it in the next 3 years. And number this four was, he'll consider that as well the next 3 years. And so that's, again, back to that continuous improvement and letting that producer kind of think about if he answers it in the next 3 years, then he'll consider it. And along the way, as he's taking this self-assessment, a producer can, as he finishes the self-assessment, he can then select a pie graph on each question, and it shows him where he stands among all the other participants who have taken the self-assessment. And, of course, it's all confidential, and you don't see any names. It's aggregate data. But it kind of gives him an idea of, you know, kind of looking over the fence at your neighbor's yard. It makes him think about, well, I answered it this way, but why are they all answering it that way? And so it's kind of makes him want to look inward at his operation. And as far as the self-assessment questionnaire, when I mentioned the required and recommended practices, this shows the breakdown of the questions. And like I said, there was, I think, close to 112 questions in the questionnaire. And 33% are required management practices, and 67% are recommended management practices with the four choices, as I mentioned. And this provides cumulative data as a producer answers the questionnaire. Now, I mentioned to you about how a producer can look into the self-assessment and see where he lies with his how he answers his questions. And at this point, when I when I received this data from our questionnaire, we had 175 producers who have taken the self-assessment. And so provides us some information at the protocol where kind of gives you a good idea of what our producers are doing. And so for example, the use of cover crops, you have 47% that do now on most of their fields and 35% that are implementing on one or more of my fields or their fields. So you're talking about 82%. 10% are considering doing over the next 3 years, and then you have the small percentage that says it's not appropriate for their farming operation. Well, if I was a producer and I'd consider over the next 3 years, and then you look at this data and you realize, wow, that's a big percentage of producers that are doing that. They're a part of this program. So it might make them to look even further inward to say, maybe I should start doing this. Licensed crop consultant, over 90% are doing it with using someone on most of their fields or on one or more. There's a very small percentage of not appropriate, as well as considering the next 3 years. So that's useful for a lot of you guys in this audience. And this is an interesting one. Utilize flow meters. Utilize flow meters to measure water use. You had 47% that are doing it on most of the fields, as well as 20% that are implementing one or more. You have 22% not appropriate to the farming operation. So this kind of told us, as we were looking at the numbers, that this is obviously your dry land cotton. Enhancing pollinator habitat by planting wildflowers and allowing other native vegetation to become established in appropriate areas. Well, this is kind of a balanced graph, as you can see. You have the red at 28% doing now on most of their fields, and then you have the blue, which is implementing on one or more of my fields, their fields. The 30% is they'll consider over the next 3 years, and then you have an area that says not appropriate. So this is something that would be quite interesting as far as the educating, as far as the producer and pointing out how this could be helpful for his operation. Test drinking water. That's a test drinking water used by family and farm workers periodically to ensure bacteria, nitrate, and other pollutants do not exceed safe levels. This too is kind of interesting the way the numbers unfold. And do now most of my fields 46%. So you have like half of them that are doing it, and then you have 16% that said they'll consider it, but then you have a big percentage that says it's not appropriate to their farming operation. The review and update the health and safety program periodically and conduct periodic meetings and training sessions. This was interesting, where 84% are doing this, but 16% said they'll do it next year. I was actually hoping that this graph would be one solid color, but at least producers, as they were answering this questionnaire, are being honest about it, and so it's, and they will definitely make them consider about their training. And you know, a lot of us know about the 4 R's of nutrient management and their plans, and the red bar and the blue bars are the ones that are, it's pretty high as far as a lot of our producers are implementing that nutrient management plan. So the self-assessment, again, is the overall look at the farming operation and how they answer the questionnaire. Now, you get a little bit more specific down to the field level with using the data tool, as we all know. To be a member of the Trust Protocol, a producer has to use the field-to-market field print platform or any of the qualified partners, data partners. And those, we've got a couple in this room, whether it be Agrible or LandDB or MyFarms and Truterra, some others. But the producers need to record inputs into a system that measures the environmental impacts of the crop production. And that it would be the producer would have to take 10% of his acreage and input this quantitative data into the tool, and it allows him to kind of see that environmental footprint of his operation. And it's back to that continuous improvement message. However his footprint shows, and then it can kind of give him an idea of where he might need to improve his operation. An example of that would be this from Field 27. I think it's from Louisiana. Dr. Andy Jordan provided this for me. But so before you had this field that was conventional tillage, and it included erodible areas where there were 50 acres that were poor productivity, and it cultivated a crop all the way to the bayou. And then they changed some of their practices and went to no-till. They excluded the 50 acres, and then they added a riparian buffer. And after inputting this information into the FieldPrint platform, it it shows the before and after, and it shows how soil loss decreased, and your soil carbon increased, and your greenhouse gas decreased, your energy decreased, and then your water quality index increased. And at the bottom, it might be hard to see, but that shows the spidergram of his operation, and it does show how it's improved some from left to right. The third component of the trust protocol is the verification. The self-assessment and the data tool will have to be validated by an independent party, and it will be a random sampling of the producers that are participating. There'll be a third party, again, a third party verification visit, but as well as there's going to be a second party verification, and that's where a lot of your merchants and cooperatives are involved in that part of the process. So that's the what of the protocol, the why we need it, which we've heard a lot of these probably already this morning from Jesse and Gary. Might have mentioned some as well, but back to that continuous improvement message that the task force placed. The spidergram provides so much information for a producer where, it allows him to look inside his operation and see where he might can improve, and might show that he has an incredible operation. But it also, he can look at state and national benchmarks, so he can even kind of, it allows him to see how he compares against the averages. And it's providing that feedback again. Another reason why this program is important is to back to those industry goals again. We want to achieve our industry goals. And so the self-assessment questionnaire, as I've shown you earlier, it's six of the nine categories all are related to our industry goals that the task force placed on us. And so, and again, that's helping us get to that point, get to 2025. And so as they keep taking these, every year, these producers will have to take the self-assessment year after year after year, because you're hoping that they're as they're taking these questions, they're changing some of them, but due to improving their process, or changing their ideas on what they're doing. Another reason is to meet the needs of our customers. Jesse provided us a lot of information about the brands and retailers. You know, a lot of these brands and retailers, they see U.S. cotton as being sustainable or responsibly produced. But as he showed, that needle has moved where brands and retailers are wanting more information, defined standards, a verification process. And so that's why this program is important to our industry. We must be flexible with the ability to pass that this data to these brands and retailers and help them, because they're not only they have consumers, but it's also their investors that are all part of this, and so it's we want to be a part of the solution for them. Another reason, reclaim market share. You know, we all know that through the years we've lost a big part of our market share due to synthetics, and this we you know. For 26 years before I got this job, I was a merchant. And so we were all, you always heard about how can we get the market share back? How can we get some of it back? And, you know, this is an opportunity. This is a new program. And when you have a lot of the, back to that generation, the millennials to the Generation Zs, how they're wanting to have a story behind their product. This is our opportunity, and this is our opportunity to grab some that, that share back. So we want to be another reason why we want to be the supplier of choice. You know, and again, this isn't about one grower being more sustainable than another, or one bale being more responsibly produced than another bale of cotton. And it's not about guaranteeing a premium either. It's just we're making sure that U.S. cotton is accessible in all markets in the world. And so we need to make sure that we're not on the outside and looking in on the on opportunities for our industry. And so, you know, we can't afford to lose market access because of a perceived lack of sustainability by the world. And so, you know, we're poised to compete. We have, you know, 20 million bale crops. We can have bigger ones in the future as well. But we need to make sure that we have that demand base. And so if that needle keeps moving to more and more brands and retailers like they're saying, and what we're hearing, then we need to be a part of this program. Our industry does. So we want to compete in every market and every supply chain. Our industry, we want to make sure we meet the needs for quality, cleanliness, timeliness, and sustainability. The protocol allows U.S. cotton to tell an even stronger story to our customers and provide support for their various reports or reporting. Jesse mentioned from CSR to ESG to science-based targeting. There's all these different reports that these sustainability directors have to provide for their companies and the brands and retailers. And so, and I'm sure it can probably be very time-consuming. And so, what we want like to do as far as the protocol is we'd like to make a pledge to these brands and retailers. We would like to enable brands to meet their sustainability goals. We want to be a part of their solution.
Chip and detailed tracking systems, U.S. Cotton is innovating at every step of the way. When sourcing cotton, brands also set high standards. They demand quality, consistency, and materials that are ethical and sustainable. They care about the journey throughout the supply chain. Consumers have high standards too. People want clothes they look good and feel good in. A crisp white shirt, a flowing summer dress, and the cozy pajamas you can't wait to put on at the end of the day. But consumer standards are changing. Increasingly, they care about the impact of what they wear on the wider world. Price matters, but clothes can't cost the earth. The U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol sets a new standard. It lets brands, businesses, and consumers trust in the cotton they buy, sell, and wear for today and for tomorrow. For many brands, it's the missing piece of the puzzle, giving them the confidence to add verified U.S. cotton to the sustainable cotton they already source and sell. It is a standard that benefits everyone, from the seed to the shop floor to the shelf, from the farmer who grows cotton to the family who wears it. U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol, trust in a smarter cotton future.
This video that you just watched, it was we've hired a publicity agency to help us with promotions with brands and retailers worldwide, and it's a well-respected agency that's based out of London and New York, and these are the type of messages that brands and retailers will see for the next 3 years, and it's quite exciting when you have something like that that's been produced for us. As far as the protocol, though, we're over close to as far as the pilot phase. It started back in June, and it's right over 200 producers who have enrolled, which is exciting. And then you have our goal for this fall will be to have anywhere from 750 to 1,000 producers enrolled, and I think that's a goal that can be achieved. I really do. I think. Producers are embracing this, and as well as your merchants and cooperatives, and you're going to have when the demand from the brands and retailers comes through, then it's going to create more. But the As far as enrollment, we're still allowing some producers to enroll currently this first quarter of 2020. April 1st will be the enrollment for the 2020 crop. This one that's that the ones who are enrolling first quarter are for the 2019 crop. We have a, as you saw, it's trustuscotton.org is our website. And if you go to it, it's got a lot of information. It's got some good videos as far as some producer testimonies and as well as some additional information, our mission statements and things like that. And we also have, if you notice the FAQ up the top there, if a producer were to go to it or a brand new retailer, there's going to be two different sections. This first section will be is for a producer. He can has commonly asked questions with the answers there for him. And there's also another section for the other side of the supply chain. So as far as talking about the producers, and we're having to create a the mind shift of a producer, and rather than asking the questions, why do I need to be a part of it, we need to be changed to why not. We want him to be able to say, I'd like to be a part. I want to be able to share my message of how I am sustainable, and I want the world to know that we are good stewards of the land and good stewards of the environment and how we treat our fellow employees and man nicely. And so so we want to be able to change it from why to why not. I want to be a part. I want to be in. And so there's a four-pillar approach to this as far as the protocol goes. And again, this is another publicity agency is helping us with this, who's been helpful with the Cotton Board and Cotton Incorporated and Archer Malmo. And so the first part of this pillar, we want to make sure that as far as awareness and education with the producers and let them know the reasons why is what I shared with you guys earlier. And we want to engage with them and allow them to ask the questions and where we can provide the answers. And and then there's the registration process, which is, they're registering their name and their operation and the gins they're using, and you're collecting that information, and then it's to the completing the enrollment. And to back up just a little bit, as I said, the self-assessment takes 30 to 45 minutes for the PhilPrint platform. It takes anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour. I would. That's what I've been hearing and I've seen. So, we just want to make sure that the producers are part and they want to be in. And
merchants and consumers want sustainable cotton. The good news is we already have it. The U.S. cotton industry leads the world in sustainable initiatives, from conserving soil and water to reducing inputs and greenhouse emissions. It's why we produce the highest quality cotton on the planet and how we're going to continue to do so. When you sign up for the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol, you're making a pledge to show the world just how sustainable we really are.
I'm in.
I'm in.
I'm in.
I'm in.
I'm in.
So this is a message that we'll be using over the next few months, whether it be at Southern Southeastern or gin shows or you name it. We want that I'm in message to be shared with the producers and want them to be a part. As far as the pilot, we've had some lessons learned out of it. Especially when you're talking about the producers, we had a year ago, we had a producer workshop at the council where they went through the self-assessment and kind of gave us some ideas of how long it took them and also what kind of hiccups they might have when going through the program. And so it hadn't been launched at that point, so it was helpful that that feedback was. And we had two or three workshops. We had one in Memphis and two in Lubbock. And then after the pilot was launched, the producers who have enrolled, and then a lot of them were industry leaders and that were have been involved, but we've been able to get some feedback from them as far as what they think. And, you know, and a lot of it, you know, the privacy of data, that was a concern, you know, a producer has, or some of them had, and we got to make sure that we make them understand that it's their information is safe and secure, and it's also any of this data that's going to be passed through the supply chain, it's all going to be aggregate data. It's not going to be John Brown's name on this information going up through the supply chain. And another thing we learned through this was the self-assessment, especially when we received this that 175, as I showed you all those different graphs and everything, irrigated versus non-irrigated self-assessment. When you saw that one about the flow meters and you had 20, I forgot what the percentage was, but we assumed it was dry land. But what we're doing about that is we're going to, as a producer enrolls, and if he has to put down the percentage of cotton that he has irrigated or as far as his acreage, if he puts a 0% down, which that means he's dry land, then it will he will have a self-assessment that has nothing to do as far as he will not have to answer questions about irrigation practices. Another lesson learned was regionalization of the self-assessment. There are some questions on the in that 112 that might not pertain to a West Texas producer, just like it might a question might not be relevant to a Georgia producer. And so with the help of with Cotton Incorporated and Andy Jordan, and as well as Dr. Bill Norman and others at the council, we've gone through the self-assessment, and rather than it being a broad self-assessment for the four areas, growing areas of our country, we now are narrowing it down to almost, if you include the irrigated, non-irrigated, it's basically eight self-assessments. And so, but it kind of personalizes it to the producer, where he does feel like it's that we're talking to him directly as far as the self-assessment. And we also noticed we needed a need for comprehensive communication strategy. It's gonna be industry driven. It has to be from all different directions, producers. And merchants and cooperatives, everybody needs to learn about this program, and it's going to take, whether it be consultants to mention this program to their producers, to the merchants and cooperatives who are signing their producers into pools or contracting cotton with their producers, how they should direct them to this program, as well as gin managers. Gin managers in the Southeast, they do a good bit of marketing for their producers, and so gin managers, we have to engage that community as well to help enroll producers in this program. And so it's I'm quite excited about it. I don't know if you noticed, but Q&A. Anything that you would like to ask about the program itself, I'll be glad to share any answers. Great question. We visited about that in our first board meeting. And so the same, they're our IT provider, and they've helped us with the website as well as the self-assessment and the dashboard of the producer, and for the dashboard of all the other participants of the protocol, whether it be the merchant community or the brands and retailers and mills. And so we're still in development phase of that. Our board, we're very excited about talking about that, and what we're really at this point, we're getting information back from the brands and retailers about the data they need to receive. And so once we get that information, then that will be then provided for them with the development of the SEAM. So to be continued, next year I'll have a direct answer with you on that. But it's definitely be passed through. But there's, and when you, what you'll find out between brands and retailers, a lot of them have different ideas as well. And some of them are taking their emphasis, again, back to brand A, brand B, brand C. A lot of them have different ideas as far as how they want to receive the data. So we're going to have to receive all that information, whether it be through surveys or through our board, and see what we can do about helping them. Anyone else? That I might have to ask Jesse if he wants, because Jesse's on the board with the field of market, and he would.
So the question was, how do you get the soil loss data? Is that correct? That's using a filtering calculator by Field to Market Alliance for Sustainable Agriculture. And that tool will bring in data about soils, plants of the actual ground, what practices you form on that land, whether it be reduced or strip or full tillage, as well as what cover crops you may or may not be.
Good question. Yes.
Yeah, excuse me if I missed this, but how often would a grower take this self-assessment? Would they do it on a yearly basis, or how would that work?
Yes, every year he would have to go into the system, the dashboard, and complete the self-assessment, as well as input his field level data, because that information obviously is can change from year to year, the field level. A lot of the self-assessment questions, some of them are pretty much going to be the same answers year to year. But however, back to if he answers, I'll consider this next 3 years, and he changes, he decides he's going to do it that year, then that question could change. Then again, you also get 4 years down the road, and he's still answering it the same way, then we need to, he needs to really look inward about changing his process. Every year, the annual. Yes. Yep. Yes. And again, that's back to the development of it by the SEAM, but they would be able to go into their dashboard and even compare his 5 years from now. He could see how he was, over the 5 year period, or how he answered his questions. Sure. Okay, it's gonna be a random selection of the producers by area, since random's supposed to be random, but we don't want, for some reason or another, all of that random selection be from the Southeast. It's got to be across the Cotton Belt. But we've interviewed various companies that have who specialize in that, and we're making sure that they have experience as far as interviewing producers, and they have experience with, obviously, in agriculture. We want to make sure that when they verify and they have a field visit, that they are only verifying the program as far as the self-assessment and the that data tool. They can't, part of our discussions with them, they can't go to the producer and look under a rock that has nothing to do with this program. That won't make a producer happy, and definitely wouldn't make the executive director happy. And so that's, and as far as the percentage of the third party, it would, that depends on my board, which we've proposed a percentage of them and to them, and we're going to vote on that. They will make that decision next month, when we're going to have a conference call. But there'll be a percentage of anywhere from 5 to 10% for third party. For second party, we're anywhere from 18 to 25% will be a second party verification. We see that as could be a desktop audit. versus a merchant or cooperative having to go visit at the field. But those are things that my board still has to decide for me. Any other questions? We're in the process of establishing those targets. It's another to be continued, but we are working on that. Thanks, Jeff. Yes. Great question. We're as we're visiting with those independent companies, what we would like is for those companies to have a desktop audit where it would save time for that grower. So we'd like him to that company to once I notify the grower that he's been selected or he won the lottery and he's going to be the be verified. Well, then that third party would then, through communications of his merchant cooperative, can do some of it. We'd like over the phone, as well as whatever information or certificates or whatever needs to be shown can be sent by scanned images to that verifier, as well as if we can do even some FaceTime or whatever. But. That third party company will still have to have a field visit, and so as far as that though, if he has a lot of it based on desktop and interviews on the phone, then we hope that be only no longer than 2 hours for a producer, and our verifications we plan that to be from January through March, where that would be the time where a producer is not as busy as he is from spring through fall. Our biggest challenge will to make sure that producer is not in a tree stand. So, but yes.
What sort of data sharing agreements or other agreements do you have with other certifiers like BCI? If the grower's already enrolled in one of those, is there a way to?
You brought up, and that's a great question as well. First of all, you mentioned BCI. BCI, we've had through the past, since March of last year, we've had but even before that, and before I was hired, we were having good discussions with BCI. And even here recently, this past fall, they were in Memphis and gave me the opportunity to speak to their brands and retailers about the program. And so there's a good synergy between our two programs. And in fact, after I gave my presentation, Scott Exo with BCI, he gave a presentation on benchmarking, and he said to the group that he said we hope to benchmark sooner rather than later with the protocol. So it's a really good synergy as far as that goes. And so as far as the data sharing and things like that. Not necessarily about BCI, but there's when you're talking about a field print platform, and when you're talking about companies like Agrible and My Farms and all that, there's some hoops that we're gonna have to get through, because a lot of producers do not want to enter data twice, and that will create some legal agreements between the protocol and other entities. If a producer elects or would like his data to be shared to the protocol, and where it populate the self-assessment questionnaire, where it would so there's a lot of things like that that's gonna starting this quarter and even by June, we're gonna have a lot of discussions about that with companies. So, but we're and then when you think about a lot of these other producers are using. Whether it be Climate or my John Deere, there's over 85 different ag data tools out there. And so we're, as far as our program and the success of it, is based on the Fieldprint platform and those qualified data partners like your Agribles and MyFarms. And so there's a whole other group of companies out there that we, either the producer is going to have to input his data twice, or we have to have discussions with those type companies as well. Any other questions? Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.